want my kids near that kid because I judge that kid as just a bad kid. And the parents, too. They're all bad. The other thing that I learned is it wasn't just the kids that went through the trauma. It's the parents as well. It's the families. The families have gone through tremendous trauma. So, and often, you know, the kid gets punished for, you know, things in some cases that the parents are doing as well. So it's a combination of things. But I think all of the families that we followed in this film, even including the ones that didn't make it into the film, so we followed other stories as well, will be certainly forever in my heart. I care about them all.
That was Robert May, the director and producer of the new documentary Kids for Cash, and Bob Schwartz, executive director of the Juvenile Law Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Judge Mark Chivarella is currently serving a 28-year sentence, and President Judge Michael Conahan is serving 17 years for taking $2.6 million from two private prisons. Chivarella serving his sentence in Illinois, Conahan in Florida. Both judges spoke to filmmaker Robert May before they went to jail. In October, the private juvenile detention companies at the heart of the Kids for Cash scandal in Pennsylvania settled a civil lawsuit for $2.5 million. The film Kids for Cash is set to open in Philadelphia on Wednesday night at the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts in Philadelphia. It then opens in theaters nationwide. We'll post details on our website. You can also visit our website for our past coverage of the Kids for Cash scandal. That's democracynow.org. A very happy birthday to Hugh Grant. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Tarina Nadura, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Gadars, Brenda Murat, Isis Phillips, Neil Shabata, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Krug-Meadows, Carlo DeJesus, and Bill Randall. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, again, is democracynow.org. You can go there. You can see, read, watch, and listen to all of our programs over the past close to 18 years. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
This is Donna with your WUSB concert billboard for Sunday, February 2nd. The Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport welcomes Leah Kay at 1. Gathering Time will be at the Massapequa Public Library at 1. Cassandra House will be at the Bitter End, Manhattan, at 8. On your billboard for Monday, February 3rd, Brain Cloud will be at Barb's of Brooklyn at 7. Albert Lee will be at the Iridium, 8 p.m. Bobby McGrath and the Brothers will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 8:30. On your billboard for Tuesday, February 4th, Albert Lee will be at the Iridium, 8 p.m. Marsha Ball, Tommy Castro, and the Painkillers will be at B.B. King's Blues Club, Manhattan, 8 p.m. The Connie Crothers Quartet will be at Roulette in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Looking ahead to Thursday, February 6th, Kerry Carney, Johnny Lee Jordan, Rory Kelly, and many more will be at the Patchogue Theater for the Performing Arts, live in the lobby at 7:30.
Steve K. reminding you to tune in each day to hear the concert listings from Manhattan to Montauk and beyond. Concert billboard announcements are scheduled for midnight, 3, 7, and 9 a.m., 2:30, 6, and 9 p.m. Check out our website, WUSB.FM, and the Facebook group page for any last-minute additions. And thank you for listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. good evening. And welcome to another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And Mother Nature has tried to step in and prevent this from happening, but her efforts have been thwarted yet again. Wow, what a winter this is turning out to be. Is this not awesome or what? I mean, it is. It's awesome. I think it's great. Everybody's complaining. Everyone's upset. Yeah, and you saw what happened down south with just over 2 inches of snow in Georgia, Alabama. Nobody had any idea how to deal with it. I don't understand that at all. I just do not understand that. Some people are saying the cities and towns didn't have any salt to fight the snow on the road. Seems to me that, as far as I know, salt is a preservative, right? So that means that it stays good. So if you buy salt once, it'll last a long, long time. So even if you're on the equator and you find yourself running a small town there, get some salt. And you just have salt lying around, waiting for that one time you get a blizzard or just even a snow flurry. Because apparently that's enough to really make people freak out down there. So, yeah, I don't accept that they didn't have salt to make the roads a bit clearer than they were. And it also goes to show how things work in degrees. I mean, if you go up to northern New York or Canada, you'll see, 2 feet of snow, no big deal. There's still going to be school tomorrow. And here in New York, we're getting hit pretty hard by a lot of storms. Another one's coming tonight. But with everyone that we get hit with, we get a little better at it. It's not so dominant on the news. And we live our lives. Of course, they do seem to be getting a bit more serious with each storm that arrives. The first one, we've had three so far, right? And we might have even had a dusting or something before that. I've lost track. It's a good winter when I've lost track of how much snow there has been. But the first one was not so much as far as actual accumulation, but it was a lot as far as wind and blizzard-like conditions. And then the other one was 2 weeks ago, kept me from actually making it to the station for the first time. And that was more of an accumulation. But we got through that. The one that happened on Monday, yesterday, that kind of caught me by surprise because I don't think even the weathermen really knew that was going to hit us until late Sunday night. And it was the Super Bowl and all that, and people kind of weren't paying attention. And by the time I found out about it, it was after midnight. No food at all in the house, and no real desire to go out and find any, even most places except maybe Taco Bell are open. No, you know, even the supermarkets are closed. So, yeah, no real options. So I guess we have to pay a bit more attention. Tonight, after midnight, it's going to happen all over again, except this time, they say, it's going to turn to sleet, which means we'll have ice now, a coating of ice, and then maybe some rain, and maybe it'll go back to snow again. Nobody knows. No one knows what's going to happen. Oh, that's not all. There's something else coming for the weekend. This is a great winter. I'm enjoying it. And yes, sometimes you wind up starving in a house with no electricity. That does happen. But we're human beings. Didn't get this far by giving up. And at worst, you find yourself inconvenienced for a day or two, and life goes on. And we should go on with it. Yeah, Super Bowl. Wow, okay. I know it upsets people when I talk about sports, but you know what? It's a part of life. It's a part of our culture. It's a part of what's happening around us. And we can't just cover our eyes and ears and make loud noises and pretend it's not happening. It's happening. It happened. It is history. It is real. And I'd much rather pay attention to the things going on around me. than simply pretend they don't exist. And, you know, I don't have any real problem with the Super Bowl. I think it's kind of crazy and ridiculous, but fun at the same time, just watching all the mayhem. And boy, was there mayhem. First time it ever happened in the New York area. Yes, I'm saying New York area. I'm not saying New York because it happened in New Jersey. So the New York area, I think that's a good compromise. And a lot of issues with crowd control, just basically crowd getting them from one place to another because of all the hysteria over security and what could happen, what might happen. And at some point, you got to say, all right, you know what? This is as good as we're going to get. Let's just deal with it and see what happens. Because in the vast majority of cases, nothing is going to happen, obviously. And there comes a point, there comes, I guess it's a critical mass or something, where the security outweighs the threat. It becomes as unpleasant as anything you're trying to avoid. People passing out, people afraid to take a step out of the strict boundaries that are given to them. And we become a place that just is constantly looking over our shoulders, has no freedom whatsoever, suspicious of everybody. And sometimes you just gotta have a little faith that humanity isn't quite as bad as we give it credit for, at least not all the time. I guess those words may come back to haunt me, seeing as how Sochi is coming up in just a few days, but, you know, who knows? If I was a terrorist, I know a lot of people are going to debate me right away on that, but if I was a terrorist, I would say, you know what, we already won. Because everybody is so scared and panicky. I'm speaking about the Sochi games coming up in Russia. They don't have to do anything. Because they have the desired effect. In fact, anything they do at this point will just work against them. Now, hopefully they're listening and have been convinced not to do anything. See? It's that simple. We'll check in a week. How long are the Olympics going for? What? 3 months? 2 months? Forever, right? Yeah, it goes on forever. Well, okay, so anyway, the Super Bowl, the biggest sporting event of the year in our country. And it all happens at one time. Took place in the New York area. And, you know, I had it all planned. I don't go to Super Bowl parties because I'm not into that. But I will have it on in the background. I'm doing something else. It's a fun distraction. And I do like watching the commercials on. Yeah, I know that's another thing that makes people's eyes roll into the back of their heads. Well, you got to deal with it. The commercials exist. Television exists. Sports exists. And there are all kinds of things about all these things that are annoying and emblematic of the problems in our culture and all that. Blah, blah, blah. Yes, I know. But it's still happening. And it's fun to pay attention, critique it, notice things, see evolution. And yeah, the commercials, you do see evolution. You see things happen that wouldn't have happened even 5 years ago. And that's kind of cool to notice these things. I'll get to that. But what happened to me was I had it all planned out. I was just going to hang out. And have hot, spicy wings. That's all I wanted. Have a nice plate of hot, spicy wings. So you know what? The game started at, it was supposed to start at 6:30. So I figure, okay, I'm going to call the wing place at 5:30, go get my wings, you know, hang out, do some work, have the game on in the background. It'll be a fun Sunday night. Didn't know about the snow coming, but even so, I thought it would be a fun Sunday night. Well, it turns out, and this is the bane of my existence, turns out my idea was the same idea that a lot of other people had. And so when I called the wing place, I said, okay, yeah, we can do that, but you won't be able to pick it up till 10 o'clock at night. About 5 hours from when I was placing the order. 10 o'clock at night? What kind of wings are these? Are you growing the chickens? What? How could it possibly take so long? Well, it's a Super Bowl. So yeah, I know it's a Super Bowl. I didn't know the Super Bowl meant that people can't make wings. But apparently it does. I still don't understand it. They said they were very busy. I figured they were very busy. I still don't get the 4.5-5-hour delay in making wings, even if you are busy. So I called a different place, same thing. And I realized, okay, you know what? I fell into this trap. Should have ordered them the Tuesday before or something. Who knows? Live and learn. And in this case, not have wings. But I was not giving up. And I called around, and I finally found this redneck bar. I don't want to call it that. That's not the right thing to call it. Well, I mean, I want to paint the picture, and you know what I mean when I say a redneck bar. A bar with people. How should I say this? With different political beliefs than I might be used to. A good portion of their lives spent waving a piece of cloth around with stars and stripes on and fighting fires and bad people, worshiping certain weapons, thinking back to the good old days. You know, things like that. Not the kind of people I usually hang out with. Okay, so I went to this place. They were able to do it because they weren't that busy. But everybody in the place knew each other. I arrived to pick these things up. I knew I was going to miss the beginning of the game because of all these problems that suddenly were thrown in my direction. So picking up wings took a lot longer than I thought it would. I had to drive to a town that I don't live in, to a place I'd never been before, walk into this bar that I felt like I was walking into somebody's living room. They all knew each other, all watching the game. The game had just started when I walked in, had just started. And if you pay any attention, and it's hard not to really hear what happened, but if you didn't hear what happened, in the first 12 seconds of the game, there was an unusual score by Seattle. Now, for some reason, and I'm not going to theorize as to why, everybody in this redneck bar was a Denver fan. In fact, I've noticed that more rednecks tend to be Denver fans than Seattle fans. And I was really the only person in there that was rooting for Seattle. I wasn't really rooting for anybody, but if I had to pick, I would rather Seattle won because they had never won before, and I just thought it would be kind of cool. And so this happens. The first 12 seconds, I walk in. Hey, I'm picking up an order. Never seen me before. This complete stranger, just like an episode of a TV show, comes into this bar. Didn't have the swinging saloon doors and the woman playing the piano who suddenly stops and everybody looks at me as I walk in. No, that didn't happen this time. But I was definitely standing out and different and noticed. But not so much because the game had just started, and right away, there is that safety, which basically means that Denver dropped the ball in the wrong place and were tackled in their own end zone, and that means 2 points to the other team. Doesn't happen very often. That's why you don't see a score of 2-0 in a football game very often. It's usually 3-0 because of a field goal. Or 7-0 because of a touchdown with a field goal, or 6-0 if they miss the field goal. 2-0 is an unusual score. And that happened right away, as soon as I walked in. And as I was waiting for my wings to be brought to the bar so I could get out of there, the guy next to me, this old guy, just kept saying, "I'd never seen anything like that before in my life. Oh my God, I cannot believe I saw that. This just happened in front of me. I never," basically about 12 times, he just kept repeating how he had never seen anything like that before in his life. And, I had to wonder, what kind of a life have you led where this really stands out that much? But he kept saying at one point, I would bet my entire retirement fund that that would never have happened and I would have lost it. He's probably still going on about how he did not see that coming. He never would have expected it. Never saw anything like that before and probably never will ever see anything like that again. It was a big deal. And there are similar such conversations going on all around the bar. And the only thing I really said at that point, because it was kind of awkward, I was standing there, was that, the tone of the game is set in those first few seconds. And then my wings were ready and I got out of there. But I realized after I left, what a strange impression I must have made. You know, here I am, this complete stranger walking into this bar where everybody knows each other. You know, this guy in a black trench coat just suddenly comes in out of the cold night air, issues a proclamation that the tone of the game is set at the very beginning after a very unusual score, and then disappears like that and is never seen again. And of course, Seattle went on to really kick the crap out of Denver. So the tone was indeed set during those first couple of seconds. And I just wonder, all those people in the bar that know each other, what they're thinking. If they wonder who that was that intruded in their private life for a few brief seconds on Sunday and then disappeared, never to be seen again. And I'm relatively sure they don't listen to 90.1 FM, so they'll never figure it out. I don't intend to go back. The wings were okay, but they weren't great. So, you know, I'll figure something else out next time. But yeah, it was an interesting game. It wasn't a good game because it was such a lopsided one, but it was just kind of fun to have on in the background. And of course, the commercials also were kind of cool. A lot of humor, a lot of strange comedy, social things going on there. And of course, the way people react is also something that tells us a lot about ourselves. I saw the infamous Coke ad. I didn't know it was so infamous at the time. You know what I'm talking about? It was... They were singing America the Beautiful. Now, what does that have to do with Coke? Well, okay, fine. Coke is a big evil multinational corporation and all this misfounded patriotism and all that. Yeah, I know. I get it. But still, there was something to be said in this. The fact that the commercial consisted of the song America the Beautiful, which is a far better song than the Star Spangled Banner, as far as I'm concerned. Actually, just about any song is better than the Star Spangled Banner. But I'll get it. That's a whole show right there. They basically showed people of all different kinds, including, I heard a gay couple. I missed that. Somehow I didn't see that. But people of all different nationalities singing America the Beautiful in different languages. And it was really moving to realize that this was a representation of our country. Yeah, to sell a product. I know, I get it. I'm as cynical as the rest, but it still was beautiful to see this. And I was really surprised, stunned, shocked. Not as shocked as the guy who saw the safety in the first 12 seconds, but still pretty surprised to see the reaction on Fox News. And throughout the conservative community of this country, they were outraged. That beautiful moment, they were outraged by this. Were they outraged because a song was being used to sell a commercial product? No, it wasn't that. Outraged at kids drinking Coke and not getting any nutrition? No, that's okay, no problem there. They were outraged at the fact that people were using different languages to sing that song. Seven different languages. Showing our diversity. I should have known. Diversity is bad. Something that frightens these people. Glenn Beck, and I don't like to quote Glenn Beck, but unfortunately that's the trigger point of all this. He said, why did you need that to divide us politically? Because that's all this ad is in your face, and if you don't like it, you're offended by it. If you're offended by it, you're a racist. If you do like it, you're for immigration. You're for progress. That's all this is, to divide people. Well, I guess, you know, if you see progress as a bad thing, yeah, it is divisive. And I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought that if we look at moving ahead, there are going to be those people who say, no, that's bad. Let's not move ahead. Let's not be progressive. Let's be regressive. And being for immigration, did you see that phrase? You're for immigration. Like, immigration is a bad thing. We're not even saying illegal immigration anymore. We're saying immigration, period. it's funny. It really is. I'm laughing. Well, he went on. He said every leader of the European Union that tried multiculturalism is now warning America and the rest of the world that tried multiculturalism doesn't work. You have to assimilate. I'm not sure he knows what the word means, what assimilation means, how assimilation works. It's not a switch. It's not something you turn on and all of a sudden you're assimilated. It's not like a science fiction program. It takes time. Now, Glenn, if you go back wherever your people came from, assuming it's this planet someplace, I'll bet when they first arrived, they had some kind of an accent. Maybe they even spoke some other language. And then when they had kids, those kids also spoke that language. But I'll bet they also spoke English. And I'm assuming you're at least third generation, but who knows? Maybe you came over on a boat. I don't know. But that third generation, the grandkids, probably spoke English better than the previous two generations, and I'll bet they probably didn't even speak the native language that well, if at all. I think that's kind of sad, actually. Fact is, it takes time. Lots of time. Years. Decades. But what you wind up with, you wind up with a population that has a history. All different kinds of history that merge together and that build something unique in this world. Something you clearly don't understand. And of course, you know, if you follow Twitter and see what people are saying in comment boards and things like that, you'll just get more and more depressed. This guy here couldn't make out that song they were singing. I only speak English. So was Coca-Cola saying America is beautiful because new immigrants don't learn to speak English? Coca-Cola is the official soft drink of illegals crossing the border. And so on. The commercial spot dredged up multiple hot-button issues for right-wingers, the ongoing debate over the codification of English as the primary language in the U.S., immigration reform, the acceptance of same-sex relationships in mainstream media. I missed that millisecond of apparently a gay couple, but great. And we've seen that in Super Bowl ads, too. We've seen more acceptance. And that reflects us as a culture, and that is significant. Former GOP Representative Alan West, another Fox News contributor, warned that the ad from A Company as American as They Come is a sign that we are on the road to perdition. Executives at Coca-Cola thought it was a good idea to run a 60-second Super Bowl ad featuring children singing America the Beautiful, a deeply Christian patriotic anthem whose theme is unity in several foreign languages. And that ad also prominently features a gay couple. Oh, my God. Nice to see that Coke likes to sing an American song in the terrorist language. Way to go, Coke. You can leave America. That's one Twitter user. Okay, you know, enough. I don't want to give more time to people who don't really deserve it. But it does go to show that you might see something as good as progress, only to find out that it's not what a lot of people are thinking. And we're not the only ones. We can see this overseas as well. Yes, there is a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment going on in all kinds of countries in Europe. In Spain, there are massive anti-abortion rallies. In France, there are anti-gay rallies. There's ultra-right-wing neo-Nazis, all kinds of ugly groups that are gaining strength. But to me, all that means is that they're losing. They're feeling emotion because they realize that this world that they think is the world they're building is not working. And people are rejecting it. And the worst thing we can do at this point is accept that and simply say, okay, well, let's not run a commercial like that in the future because it'll ruffle too many feathers. Let's not continue moving in this direction because we don't want all these people protesting and sending angry tweets. It's precisely the time to speak up louder and to continue with what you believe in. This is something that the left in this country doesn't seem to get. And I mean everything from the mild left to the far left. The mild left is too afraid of upsetting the right wing for some reason. I don't know why they think they can win them over. They never will. And the ultra left is too concerned with fighting the other factions of the ultra left and never quite get around to fighting the right wing. It's sad. But there are so many little victories, and big victories too, but the little victories add up to the big victories. And we see a change in attitude, and the reason you see that change in attitude is because of things that are portrayed in the mass media. Everything from TV shows like Modern Family, or movies, or books, or commercials. They change the way things are portrayed. They make us think in a different way. And that's reflected in many, many. And of course, all of these are reflections of the culture around them. So we're all reflecting off each other and moving forward in that particular way. But a lot can be lost if we pay too much attention to the naysayers. Those people who will debate everything from evolution to racial, sexual equality. To everything that so many of us take for granted. Hey, here's something. This is a good sign, I think. Our new mayor, New York City mayor, that is, Bill de Blasio, will not be marching in the nation's largest St. Patrick's Day parade. Why? Because yet again, organizers refuse to let participants carry pro-gay signs. This has been an issue for as long as I can remember, and I have never understood why it has to be an issue. But the people who organize this thing simply will not open their minds to something outside their narrow view, will not realize that there are many proud gay Irish people who have every right to exist and celebrate who they are. And to be closed out year after year after year is an insult to everybody. Not just gay people, not just Irish people, everybody. And de Blasio is the first mayor, literally in decades, who is going to sit out that traditional march. And that is huge. That is huge. I will be participating in a number of other events, he says, to honor the Irish heritage of this city, but I simply disagree with the organizers of that parade. And get this, the parade predates the city itself. I don't know how they manage that, but they draw more than 1 million people every March 17th. And it's always been a mandatory stop on the city's political trail. But this guy has enough conviction to not take part in it, and that means a lot. Now, Michael Bloomberg, Mayor de Blasio's predecessor, was also a staunch supporter of same-sex marriage rights, yet he still marched in all 12 years that he was in office. So this is the kind of thing that needs to be rewarded and emulated. And that's how you get change. That's how things become different. And yeah, it's easy to just turn your back and say, okay, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't care about the St. Patrick's Day parade. I don't care about the Super Bowl commercials. I don't care about Coca-Cola. I don't care about any of it. And cover your ears and pretend it's not there. But it is. It's significant. It's happening. It's a reflection of who we are. And we can affect what that turns into as well. And that's why I pay attention. That's why I like to pay attention. And paying attention is not an endorsement. It simply is looking at the events of the world as they go on around us, whether it be what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Russia in the next couple of weeks, what's happening anyplace. I think we just don't get very far when we only listen to the things that we want to listen to. I spend so much time listening to things I don't want to listen to because it's important, because it does have a bearing on where we go. And, you know, it's very convenient, easy, and insular to simply talk to the people you agree with all the time. Share your little memes, have your little code words and ways of making fun of the things you don't follow and agree with. And that gives you power. That makes you feel like you actually matter. But in effect, you're closing out so much that's around you. And just basically making another click. It's sixth grade all over again. You know, that's what it is. That's how I see it. You know, where the cool kids hang out in one area and the people who don't understand what's going on or aren't included, they're just the ones that you ignore. And, yeah, sixth grade all over again. I always promised both sixth grade and ninth grade. I had such issues in both of those years with bullies and stupid people and just cliques of various sorts that I never could identify. I always swore that I would come back one day and obliterate that environment. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I meant by that at the time. I'm doing some soul search. I don't think I actually meant go back and obliterate the actual buildings. That wouldn't really solve anything because those people aren't there anymore. Or maybe some of the teachers. No, they couldn't be. I wonder if it's possible that any of my grade school teachers are still teaching. Well, that'll be an interesting trip to see, but that's not what I meant. And I, you know, tracking down the actual classmates I had who made my life a living hell and exacting a revenge on them now. Well, first of all, it's been done countless times in all sorts of movies and TV shows. Epitafios, that is an Argentinian TV show that really brought that to bear in a good way. Well, a horrible way, but still very well done. But no, that's not really what I have in mind. Plus, you know, these days, it's not a challenge to find people anymore either with Facebook, for instance. Because you're in touch with these people all the time, or they track you down. So you don't have to figure out what happened to that crazy person who tormented you. Because they're your Facebook friend now. Or if they're not your Facebook friend, they're the friend of somebody else who is your Facebook friend. So I imagine we'll probably see some Facebook revenge in the future where people say, yeah, I wasn't happy with what happened in fourth grade. And now I know this person, I'm going to track them down and make their life miserable and do something to satisfy this debt. Thank you, Facebook. Oh, and Facebook is 10 years old today. Did you know that? 10 years old today. Coincidentally, the age I was at the time that this hell was going on in the first place. But yeah, that's something, isn't it? And more people than I can count don't use Facebook now. A lot less than used it, say, 4 or 5 years ago. And a lot of young people don't use Facebook. They reject it. They don't want to be tracked. They don't want to have their whereabouts known or have people know who they're friends with or anything like that. It seems stupid. I talked to a bunch of kids at Maker Faire and other places where you'd be surprised. You think it's the young people embracing this, but it's actually the older people thinking that they're being cool like the younger people and embracing this. And then you have the people who use Facebook but will not use Twitter. And then you have the people who will use Twitter but will not use Facebook. And they have all these different beliefs in what's private, what's cool, what's not cool. And of course, you have the people who use neither. You have the people who use both. You have the people who use all these other social media applications and programs and networks. And then you have people who live outside and actually converse with one another and do all kinds of other things. Sometimes you have people who do all of these, but I think on this 10th anniversary, it's important to just basically put it all in perspective. First of all, I never could understand the attraction of the interface. I thought the interface is ugly. I still do. Kludgy, not really that intuitive. Some people like it. A lot of people don't. But anytime something sucks you in and makes you spend all this time doing things, I consider that to be bad. I consider it to be bad when an outside entity has control over things that belong to you, where they could shut down and you would lose a ton of material. And this does happen. I think GeoCities was one of these social media sites that disappeared. MySpace is... Remember when MySpace was huge? Now nobody uses it anymore. And what's going to happen to all the material that's on there? I'll tell you what will happen. If they close down, it'll disappear. Because you don't own it. It's on their site. This is the problem with the digital age. We trust our memories, our pictures, our videos to somebody else, and we assume they're going to take care of them. Difference between writing a diary and writing something online that you do not control is that you can pass the diary down to people, generations. As long as you have physical possession of it, it will exist. When you have something online, you're at the mercy of whatever that particular company does. They may lose all the data through an accident. They may decide to go out of business. They may change the terms of service. There are a million things that could happen. Case in point, we have this old voicemail system that we used to use maybe 20 years ago. We cannot listen to any of the voicemail messages anymore because it's in a format that has been changed and upgraded so many times that nobody has a program that can play the original format. And there is no, at least not without incredible difficulty, way of converting what we have into something playable. Imagine having a tape recorder and recording something onto a physical tape. That will exist as long as that physical tape exists. A picture in an album will exist as long as the paper and the photographs actually exist. Books from centuries ago are still able to be read and looked at today. when things go digital, it's great. It's a way of preserving things. But when it becomes the only way you have of preserving things, it's going to disappear through accidents, through upgrading, through all sorts of things. You will find yourself one day unable to access it. And only if we combine these different worlds in an intelligent way will we have something truly worthwhile. Combining the social media with the real social lives, combining digital archiving with the analog source, never giving up one entirely, and understanding the importance of all of them. That's the lesson that I'm waiting for us to learn. We don't seem to be learning it. All right. Hey, there was... this is interesting. I meant to talk about this weeks ago. Never got around to it. I think we had the snow and we had all kinds of other distractions. But there was this this kind of weird thing that was being planned where a bunch of deer out on the East End were being literally targeted for death. There was a federal program, $200,000 state funded project to cull the deer population using federal sharpshooters. Not kidding. They were supposed to kill 3,000 deer. They're supposed to kill them using silencers. They were supposed to kill them at night. It just seemed so bizarre and crazy and strange that out of nowhere, these federal sharpshooters are going to basically touch down on Long Island using silencers and cover of night and start taking lives. It's like the nightmare that has been prophesied. First, they came for the deer, but now it's too late because they're already here. Well, that was supposed to start this month. And apparently it's not going so well. Originally, they said they were going to kill 3,000 deer. Reason being, they said they have a real crisis. This is the town of Southold. There's too many white-tailed deer. And in that agricultural North Fork town, almost everybody at a town meeting considered the overpopulation of deer a matter of course and blamed them for car accidents, millions of dollars in crop and plant damage, and what they believe is a correlation with tick-borne illnesses such as Lyme disease. Well, you know, I have issues with just about all of those statements. Lyme disease is not spread by deer, it's spread by ticks. Ticks exist with the deer, without the deer. And yes, the deer are able to get further distances, so a tick hitching a ride on a deer gets a better ride than one hitching a ride on a raccoon, say. But they're still out there. And there are ways. There are ways of dealing with this. Ways of treating the deer so that the ticks die. That's the real problem. They did this on Shelter Island. It involves feeding the deer. But when the deer actually puts its head down to eat out of the particular dispenser, this, I guess, insecticide or chemical or something gets on their ears and gets to the tick that way, and it's had something like a 90% reduction rate in the deer tick population. So there is a way to deal with that without shooting all the deer. Okay, so there's that. Car accidents, well, you know, there's a lot of deer around here now. Wasn't so many 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Reason there are so many is because their habitat has been destroyed. So they're moving into other areas. That's a problem. That's a problem as far as what we're doing to the land around us. But those people who are getting into all these accidents with deer, maybe they should look where they're going. Yeah, you know, deer can suddenly jump out in front of you. So can all kinds of things. And if you're not looking where you're going too fast, or you're just not expecting something like this to happen when it can happen at any moment, I think that's really where the issue is. I've yet to hit a deer, and I've had plenty of opportunity to hit deer, but you keep your eyes open, you tend to see these things. You know, if you had a whole bunch of kids jumping out into the road, I don't think the answer would be to shoot the kids. So, yeah, I don't accept that either. Okay, the crops, okay, farms are one thing. I don't care about your daffodils. If deer are eating daffodils, you know, don't plant them then. Plant something else that they don't like. This isn't some kind of a garden for all of us to play around in and kill anything that doesn't like or does like our flowers or plants or whatever. Crops are another thing. You know, our food supply, fine. Let farmers deal with this. Just like they deal with any kind of predator. But for us in suburbia, this should not be an issue. People say, yeah, we're doing it for their own protection because there's so many deer and they're just going to starve. I have not seen a starving deer yet. All right, I don't know where they are. But if they are starving, then, okay, that's part of the natural process as well. And them starving will feed somebody else. And the other thing we can do is release some more predators. How about some coyotes or wolves or things like that? Well, then they'll be predators of ours? Yeah. Welcome to nature. We all share this planet. And this is their habitat as well. We need to live together. Because God forbid the deer get pissed off at us. We'll have a lot of answering to do. Now, East Hampton has pulled out of the planned deer cull. They've now joined several other East End municipalities in deciding not to participate and have federal sharpshooters come in and start shooting things with silencers at night. In a statement released on Friday, the village blamed the lack of support by surrounding municipalities. Southampton, Brookhaven, Riverhead, and Shelter Island towns are not participating. We're in Brookhaven, by the way. It was the intent and desire of the village to address wildlife management issues with a regional approach, but as surrounding municipalities have not committed to participate, it no longer seems a project the village can tackle on its own. We're talking about the village of East Hampton, not the town of East Hampton. It gets confusing. The village remains committed and moving forward in this manner with its local government counterparts. So now it becomes a local issue, and of course, animal rights advocates, including many in East Hampton, have strongly objected to the program and filed suit to block it. So, wow, we're out of time. You know, I want to read some letters, I want to take some phone calls. I'm sorry, I got into this whole big Super Bowl and social media rant. Boy, these things really take on a life of their own sometimes. Please write to us, otw@2600.com, and let us know what you think of various things we've talked about and other things as well. Because there's a lot going on in the world and we need to pay attention at all times. Again, otw@2600.com is our email address. We'll be back next week. Good night. My friends, it's Finn's Revolution. It is a beautiful Tuesday evening out there. I'm here with you till 9 p.m. It's going to get, however, a bit messy. And you know what else is coming up? The Beatles' 50th anniversary of touching down in the U.S. We're going to be talking about all those things very shortly. Stay tuned.
Well, I married me a wife. She gave me trouble all of my life. Ran me out in the cold rain and snow. Rain and snow. Well, she came down the stairs, combing back long yellow hair, and her cheeks were as red as the rose, as the rose, and her cheeks were as red as the rose. Try to get along with you, and I'm not gonna be treated this way, this way, oh Lord, and I'm not gonna be treated this way. She met a fatal doom, and I'm not gonna be treated this way, this